Welcome to this Brighteon.com interview. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon. And today, one of my favorite guests, just an amazing individual, Bob Moriarty, joins us from the south of France. He is, of course, an extraordinary author, a pilot. He flew under the Eiffel Tower, like underneath, like through it, under the shape of it. I think that was illegal, but he did it anyway, and he lived to tell the tale. And he joins us to talk about much more today, including the financial contagion that seems to be spreading across Europe and the United States. Mr. Bob Moriarty, thank you for joining me today. It's an honor, sir, to have you on. I really enjoy speaking with you.
It's always a pleasure to chat with you, Mike.
Well, I'm a huge fan of your work, Bob, and I've been following, I follow pretty much all your interviews, by the way. I want to thank you for your service for our country, and you've done extraordinary things in your life. You are really, I think, a model of achievement for people, and you're not afraid to tell it like it is. You're blunt, which is what we want right here. So how do you want to begin this conversation today in a blunt fashion about where we are financially in our Western finance system?
Okay, one of the things that I tried to get across to people in interviews is that it's time for people to educate themselves and make decisions for themselves. You can't count on the government. There's a lot of people talking who literally don't know what they're talking about. Probably the best economics writer today would be Michael Hudson, and he's just come out with the book called The Collapse of Antiquity, literally in the last couple of weeks. And he talks about the foundation behind the debt-based system going back to Greek and Roman times. And let me read some of this to you, because it's very important people understand this. The book describes how the dynamics of interest-bearing debt led to the rise of renter oligarchies in classical Greek and Rome, causing economic polarization, widespread austerity, revolts, wars, and ultimately the collapse of Rome into serfdom and feudalism. That collapse bequeathed to subsequent Western civilization a pro-creditor legal philosophy that has led to today's creditor oligarchies. Now, in simple terms, here's how it works. In a debt-based system, all money is created by being lent into existence. Banks create money by writing mortgages. As long as there is interest charged, there is always more debt than there is money. So at some point in time, you have to balance the books. If you go back to Babylonian times, the kings realized that he couldn't afford to have all of the farmers lose their property because they would starve and there was nobody to grow food. We are in exactly the same situation today. The world is awash in a sea of debt. And when the Federal Reserve and the EU lowered interest rates to zero or even below zero, they created a ticking time bomb that as soon as they increased interest rates, the value of bonds plummeted. So it's not just the banking system that's at risk. It's the pension systems. Japan is bankrupt. It's insurance companies. And they took an asset that should have been the safest and the most stable, which is government treasury notes, and they made it very unstable.
Yes.
And it will lead to a total crash of the entire financial system. And I would highly advise people go to Amazon, get the book, The Collapse of Antiquity, and read it, because it tells you how we got here.
All right, I'm showing on my screen that book that you just mentioned, The Collapse of Antiquity. There it is, Michael Hudson. It just came out?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to have to check this out as well. So, The Collapse of Antiquity. Also, I want to mention your website, Bob, is 321gold.com. That's really easy to remember, folks, because it's a countdown, kind of like our Western financial system. But what you just said there, Bob, it's extraordinary that it is mathematically impossible to pay back the debt, and yet the entire system runs on debt. And the interest rate fluctuations have caught the banking system completely off guard, with rates going higher now, the U.S. raising rates, which is forcing the ECB to raise rates, which is forcing banks like Credit Suisse to go under, perhaps Deutsche Bank, who knows? I don't even know how UBS is going to handle all the bad debt from the Credit Suisse books. They wiped out bondholders. The pensions are in real trouble. And you have an uprising in France where you live right now as well. And it's going to spread. I think it's in Germany. It's going to spread to the UK. I mean, Europe is going to be on fire by summer, it seems to me, or parts of it are right now. What are you seeing?
Well, so is Israel.
Yeah, true, true.
They're literally talking about a civil war in Israel. And my argument would be that this is all related to money. The Ukraine-Russian conflict, it's not about Russia and Ukraine. It's really about the debt-based system of the West and a resource-based system of China and Russia. And quite bluntly, I think that that's what we're going to end up with. And the simple solution is to write off the debt and go to a gold-based system. And we'll be a lot more prosperous then than we are now.
Yeah, you're exactly right. But imagine, though, and I know you're aware of this, there's going to be a day of reckoning. There is massive economic chaos coming one way or another just because of the mass destruction of all these debt instruments and derivative instruments. And the pensions, as you say, are insolvent. So you've got so many people around the world living on fixed incomes, depending on those incomes, and the value of those pension payouts are losing. Well, they're losing their value every single day. To the point where even if they don't collapse, they're still collapsing slowly. It's almost like the only choices now are a fast collapse or a slow collapse, it seems. What do you think?
No, that's an absolutely perfect way of putting it. The Federal Reserve has painted themselves into a corner, and they either tighten interest rates higher and blow up the economy, or they go to QE, and we go to hyperinflation. And one or the other is going to happen. And strange enough, this has happened many times before in history. Now, the Fed has 30,000 economists working for them. Didn't occur to somebody that if they were going to raise interest rates at the highest rate in history, that something was going to blow up? So this is not something that's coming. It's happening right now, and it's going to continue, and it's going to get worse. A week ago Friday, the Wall Street Journal came out, and they said there were 186 banks that were in worse shape than the Signature Bank. Janet Yellen said, okay, SVB and Signature at First Republic will guarantee those depositors above $250,000. But for the regional banks, we won't do that. So they have literally created total chaos in the banking system. But my message, and it's very important, it's not just the banking system. It's Japan, it's the pension funds, it's the insurance companies. Everybody who was relying on the safety and the stability of government bonds, frankly, is screwed.
Yeah, and of course, the Fed just raised another 25 basis points last week, and it looks like their next meeting, which is early May, there's not a clear direction, but the market seems to be factoring in the assumption that the Fed is going to pivot in May and start lowering rates. What if they're wrong? What if Powell is dedicated to supposedly fighting inflation. Of course, he's nowhere near fighting inflation with these rate raises. But what if Powell says, screw the equities markets. We're going to keep raising rates until the European banks are destroyed. You know, is he on that track?
It's kind of a silly question. It's like discussing heart attacks versus cancer.
Right.
Which way is a better way to die? And your choice is quite simple. You either blow the economy to shreds by increasing interest rates, or you go to hyperinflation. Now, I'm not sure if you remember the Kuwaiti stock market of 1989, but it was a bubble. It was localized, okay? But if you owned a warehouse with two sheep and a goat, you would have a market cap of $100 million.
Whoa.
And of course, when you look at it, you realize it's total fraud and it was bound to blow up. Now, the difference between the Kuwaiti stock market and the world economy now is the world economy is totally intertwined. So it's going to be far worse in 2008. And in fact, it's going to be far worse than 1929. It is the biggest economic event in history. Because we've got to change our financial system. Now, the World Economic Forum, if you read this book by Michael Hudson, you realize the World Economic Forum is saying, well, what we want to do is we want to transfer all the assets to the rich and the powerful and the beautiful, the Davos crowd, and then everybody else will be a useless eater, and they can rent their house, their car, their clothes.
Right.
And of course, that's what destroyed Rome. And that's what they want to do to the world. So they're not just destroying the United States. They want to destroy the world's economy. They're going to fail, but it's going to create a lot of chaos first.
Yeah, I want to talk about that in a second, but let me ask you something that's been, I've been dying to ask you this, which is about, you just mentioned two sheep and a goat in Kuwait. And I want to ask you about chickens, because I've been raising backyard chickens for something like 15 years. And I think you and I both probably share the knowledge that everything in the world wants to eat the chickens. Tell us about your backyard chicken experience. How's that going?
Well, it's one of those good news, bad news stories. Barbara and I saw the chaos and horizon coming literally 17 years ago, and we moved to Grand Cayman, and they have a lot of chickens running around in the city, and everywhere. You find wild chickens everywhere. And we walked by a fast food place in downtown Georgetown, and I saw the bravest chickens I had ever seen. It was a KFC. And they were waiting for people to throw out the trash. And
oh, I thought, my.
That's a really brave chicken, okay? You gotta have a lot of guts to go eat your cousin. But when the whole Ukraine thing started, I wrote an article saying that sanctions were going to be a total failure, and it was going to hurt Europe far worse than it hurt Russia, and it would eventually destroy the euro, destroy the EU, destroy NATO and the United States. And a lot of people are waking up to, yeah, that's probably true. So I got a garden started with a friend of mine, and I went out and got some chickens. Now, I always grew up in big cities, okay? My idea of chicken was going to Safeway, okay? Packing it. But I got some chickens, and it's been an adventure, and I'm very popular in the neighborhood. The dogs love me, the cats love me.
Uh-huh.
Some weasels around here, they all love me. And these guys show up and they've got a bib on, okay, and they've got a knife and a fork. They're saying, hey, it's time for KFC.
They're ordering takeout from your chicken house there, huh?
Well, yeah, but that's not the worst part. The worst part is I've got a neighbor who's just wonderful. And I used to believe that phrase, the grass is greener on the other side of the fence, had something to do with cows. And it doesn't. It actually has to do with chickens. I got a fairly small yard, so they've eaten all the grass in my yard. So what they do is they run over to my neighbor's and they eat her grass.
Ah.
They come over in the morning for tea. My rooster comes and he brings all of its girlfriends. And I feed them corn and I feed them sunflower seeds and they're happy with that. And they go home and they sleep at her place.
So you're providing the universal basic income for the chickens is what you're saying. You have a UBI food stamp program.
Well, I've got a problem with my neighbor now.
Uh-huh.
Because she's got two hens and they produce almost an egg a day. And I got three hens and they produce almost an egg a day. And she brings me eggs. So she brought me a carton of 12 eggs, and I looked at it, and I said, these eggs aren't marked. And she said, what do you mean, Mark? And I said, well, some of these eggs are mine, and you're returning them. And some of these are yours, and I'd like to know which are my eggs and which are your eggs.
Yes, and also, how many days old are those eggs, too, come to think of it?
They're brand new.
They're brand new. Okay.
You find out who all your friends are.
Yeah.
You have eggs because you got to do something with them. So you give them away and you know, you go over to your neighbor's house on the other side and she's got 4 months eggs stacked up on the counter and you realize, well, that's not going to work.
Well, the other day I was in my chicken house and there's a giant rat snake in there. This is the time of year the rat snakes come out and they really love to eat those eggs. They don't mess with the adult chickens, but they'll eat baby chicks, but they really love the eggs. And I caught him with an egg in his mouth. And then you can just pick him up by the tail and the snake has to make a decision. Do I hold on to the egg or do I deal with this human predator that's got me by the tail? And so what I've learned is you're safe until he spits out the egg. And at that point, you better fling that snake far away. So that's I was flinging that snake into the pond and he had to make a swim for it. So anyway, little egg snake chicken adventures for you there. It's always a challenge, isn't it, Bob?
It's a challenge for me. Because I'm a city boy and learning how to cope with the garden and learning how to cope with chickens is something brand new to me. Oh. But I'm going to suggest the chaos is going to be so great for a period of time until we go back to honest money that people study up.
Yeah,
and they do it the way I do. I think I bought about 15 chickens, and I think I've got 3 surviving.
Well, that's not a great ratio there, Bob. That's the chickens aren't surviving as well as we would hope, huh?
This is not something that I would claim guruhood on just yet.
Okay. All right. Yeah. There is a cost of chickens in order to get some expertise in this area, but we will move on from this. I had to ask you about the chickens and I know I've got all kinds of predators in my area. They all want to eat the chickens. It's tough to keep them safe, but I will tell you, I've got about 20 hens that are about 7 or 8 years old and they're in retirement now and they're still alive and they're still doing great. It is possible, but I have dogs to protect against the predators. And then I have, I have several dogs that also fight off the coyotes, the possums, which go for the chickens, and of course the raccoons. Those are the worst. The raccoons really go for them. But it's a metaphor too for the world, right? So we have to keep our eggs safe, which is our assets, against the predators of the world, which are the financial predators, the money printers, right? The governments of the world. They are the predators, and they just want free chicken McNuggets from all of us, which is our money. And most people don't know how to keep it safe, right?
That's a really good analogy, and that's why I think Michael Hudson's book is so important. I don't know very many people talking about the debt-based system versus the resource-based system, but Putin was actually part of the Young Global Leaders, and he knew what the plans were for the World Economic Forum. And I think in this situation, it's a good thing because he knows exactly what they have planned and he doesn't go for it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he seems to have sort of reverse engineered that system and now he's fighting against it, at least as best I can tell. What do you make of the fact that the UK, I think a retired military official there said they would need 13 years to prepare the United Kingdom against an attack by Russia. That's they just have to tell Putin to pause for 13 years. And then the United States recently said, or at least some military official, that they're 10 years behind on ammunition production. 10 years. And most of Europe now is not manufacturing munitions because, of course, of the energy supply problem there caused by, well, in part by the U.S. blowing up Nord Stream. How does the West think they're going to, well, let me ask it this way, Bob. They can print money and they can print lies, but they can't print munitions. And that seems to be the one oversight on the part of the West. They just can't print munitions out of thin air. What are they going to do?
We're going to look back at this and say these people were really stupid. This is what you get at end of the empire. I was in the military, of course. I was in combat for 20 months in Vietnam as both a fighter pilot and an observation pilot. So I got a basic concept of what war is all about, and I'm absolutely, totally against war. It should never be the first solution. It should be the last solution. And this simple. If you spent $2.3 trillion in the last 20 years going into a biker bar and running your mouth, and you got your butt kicked every single time, it would be a real good idea to avoid either going into biker bars or running your mouth. Now, when we got defeated, and we got defeated in Afghanistan, our opponent, these guys were a bunch of goat herders and sheep herders. And don't underestimate the Afghans. I mean, their idea of having fun, it's kind of like a soccer match on horses. And they start off with a sheep in the middle of the field. And everybody runs out on their horses, grabs a sheep, and starts to take it to the other side, to the other line. And by the end of the game, okay, the sheep's in pieces. Okay, there's some bad people. I would not mess with the Afghans. They beat the Russians. They beat the English. Alexander the Great went in, and he looked around and said, you know, these people are pretty tough. I don't think I want to mess with them. And the United States took 20 years to realize they were getting their asses kicked. So what do? They turn around and set up a war with Russia. Now, two generals that I'm aware of, a Marine four-star general and an Army four-star general, in the last month or two have said, well, what we really need to do is we need to focus on going to war with China.
Right.
Now, if the United States lost every single war going back to World War II, why would you keep wanting to go to war? That seems pretty stupid to me. I'll tell you exactly what the problem is. Mathematically, it's easy to see. In World War II, there was one admiral for every three capital ships. Now, there are three admirals for every capital ship. At the time of the first Gulf War, there were nine four-star generals, admirals, generals, and Marines. There are 40 now. Now, if you look at any of these people on television, and this is from Petraeus on down, they got a stack like this of 30 or 40 medals.
Yeah.
For attendance, okay?
Right.
None of it was combat. None of these guys saw combat. I was really lucky. I got to fly with Marion Carl, who was first Marine Corps ace. He was at Midway. He was at Guadalcanal. I got to fly with the last Marine in World War II to shoot down a Japanese airplane. The group commanders of all the units that I were with, these guys had all been at combat in World War II. And now, none of these guys have seen any combat. And they go to some kind of school, and they come back, and they get another award, and then they get one here, and then they get one here, and they get one here, and they get one here. These guys are not warriors. So,
well, somebody should get a medal for what I'm going to show you on my screen. This is a photo of 300 plus military vehicles that the U.S. left behind in Afghanistan that have now been repaired by the Taliban. So look at this, Bob. All these Humvees. I see 50 cal turrets on top, logistics vehicles, some tow vehicles, supply chain vehicles back here. And this is obviously just a small sampling. They have a lot more than this. Plus, thousands and thousands of full auto rifles, night vision equipment, who knows what else, and various aircraft as well. As they were able to confiscate some helicopters and some aircraft, not mainstream fighter jets, because you need a supply chain of parts for that. But look at this. I mean, we left this behind in Afghanistan and just handed it over.
No. If you look at the same clip that came from, there were pallets of brand new $100 bills.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't know how much money in $100 bills you get in one pallet, but the video that I saw, there were four or five pallets of $100 bills. And I'm thinking,
I'm showing that right now. Go ahead, show my screen. Go ahead, Bob. Yeah, this is it.
Yeah,
what you're talking about.
That's it.
Stacks of cash.
Yeah. And how much is that? I mean, we're looking at tens of millions of dollars right there in cash. And we left it.
It's unreal.
When I was in school, I remember reading about the 100-year war between France and England and thinking, how could people be that stupid? And we just lived through 20 years of it. And what did they learn? Nothing. If you look at it, the Chinese are trying to achieve peace. The Russians are trying to achieve peace, and Ukraine could have had peace in March if they had just agreed to stop shooting at Donbass.
Exactly.
And they wouldn't do it.
Well, let me ask you for your assessment. I think for the first time in many years, a lot of Americans and Europeans are aware that the banking system is not stable, that Janet Yellen is not telling the truth when she says it's all okay, everything's solvent, nothing to worry about. How fragile is the system in your view? Or perhaps, I know it's hard to estimate timing, but how long can they hold this thing together?
Well, it's coming apart right now. there's simply no way they can hold it together. Now, I'm glad that we've talked about the pension system. I'm glad we've talked about the insurance companies, because the decrease in value of U.S. government bonds has guaranteed they're losing money, okay?
True,
and nobody
true.
Else is talking about it. The world's financial system is in far worse shape than anybody realizes, and they can talk all they want to about how they can fix it. Here's what you can't fix. There's $300 trillion in debt. It's never going to get paid. The banks don't want you to pay money back. They want you to pay interest, because that's how they own you. But it's not the $300 trillion in worldwide debt that's the danger. It's the quadrillion or two quadrillion in derivatives. Now, SVB, Silicon Valley Bank, went under because they didn't hedge the interest rate risk of U.S. government bonds decreasing in value. They could have hedged that. However, one of the things nobody's talking about, if they had hedged the interest rate risk so they weren't losing money, it meant that somebody else had to be losing money on the other side of the derivatives.
That's right.
The best analogy that I can come up with right now, this is like a wooden sailing ship, okay, and there's a cannon on the deck of the ship, and they're in a hurricane, and the tie downs on the cannon have broken loose. The cannon's running back and forth across the deck, running over people, crashing into things, poking holes inside.
Oh my.
There is no way we are going to survive financially what we've got. What we've got to do is we've got to look at it and say, okay, when this is through, what is the solution? And of course, the solution is, if you want an honest economy, you've got to go back to honest money.
Well, yeah. I mean, one of the takeaways from this is that the entire Western financial system was just a dollarized FTX, basically. I mean, it was just like the FTX crypto scam, but on a national or international basis. Remember the main quote crime of FTX was they printed their own tokens and assigned them value and then used that as assets to get loans. That's the federal government. That's the Fed and the Treasury. Are you kidding me? They do that every day.
Exactly. It's so simple. And if you look at it in global terms, you realize, wait a minute, it's like a balloon, okay? I don't care how big a balloon is. You can have a big balloon, small balloon. If you keep blowing into it, sooner or later, it's going to blow up. Well, we're there. Okay. And it's not a question of, is it going to blow up? It's blowing up right now. You're not going to have the second biggest banking failure in history be the last of the banking failures. When the Wall Street Journal points out there's 186 banks that are in worse shape than First Republic and Signature, you got a problem. There's a massive rush right now out of the regional banks into the six safe banks and money market funds. But it's like the loose cannon on the ship. It doesn't make any difference which way the ship turns. It's going to poke holes in it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Now, again, your website, 321gold.com. In your view, how much of a bargain is gold and silver right now because of the, you know, the paper price manipulation? I mean, it's even down a little bit today, which is bizarre.
That's
ahead.
Wrong question.
Yeah, well, I'm with you on this, Bob. I count gold and silver in ounces, not dollars, because
that's the wrong thing too.
Okay, go for it.
Have you got insurance on your house?
Well, I don't, but most people do. I don't bother paying insurance companies because it's easier for me to.
Insurance on your car?
It's a better. Yeah, I mean, I have like legally required insurance that the state mandates. Yes.
You want to collect?
No.
Okay, there are two functions for gold and gold-related investments. gold, silver, platinum, palladium, rhodium are an insurance policy against financial chaos. And the interesting thing is, you can go back to the interviews I've done for years, and I've been absolutely adamant for years that the system was going to crash because it had to crash. And having physical gold, physical silver, was an insurance policy against financial chaos.
Right.
Now, you don't want to make money on your insurance on your house. You don't want to make money on the insurance on your car. You want to have security, and that's what physical gold, physical silver is. If you want to make money on an investment now, I think you want to be looking at resources, and that would include a lot of different resources.
Yeah.
If I could store 10,000 gallons of diesel fuel, I'd do it, okay?
But yeah.
Yeah, the damn chickens wouldn't go for it. But we're going to go back to a resource-based financial system and get rid of the interest rate financial system because it doesn't work. And that's been true all the way back to Greek and Roman times. It's created enormous chaos in the world. Revolution, civil war, wars, famine, serfdom. And if you look at the World Economic Forum, it's exactly the same thing. The rich and powerful want to own everything.
Yeah.
And once they own everything, you have to rent it from them. And if you do something or say something they don't like, they just cut you off.
You're exactly right. And okay, last question for you, Mr. Moriarty. I greatly appreciate your time, by the way. It's so great to be able to just chat with you about this. But why are you driven to keep doing what you're doing here? You know, you don't have you're not selling anything in this interview. You don't have you're not representing a company with a revenue model. You're just speaking from the heart about what you do. And obviously you don't have to do this, but you do a lot of interviews. What's driving you right now?
That's actually a really good question. Okay. when you have a talent, okay, you have to use it. If you can make the world a better place for others, you've got an obligation to do that. Now, I'll be candid. I'm not filthy rich, but I am filthy comfortable. Okay, I don't have to worry about money, and I'm old, okay? We're going to go through bad times, and people are going to have two choices. They can either educate themselves and be prepared, or they can be in really bad shape, okay? Because most people don't know what they're doing. And you can look at Janet Yellen, you can look at Powell, and you can look at Biden and all the fools in the White House and realize these are not the people that are going to lead us to success and prosperity. We need to reevaluate everything we're doing. And I'm old. I've been at war. I've studied economics for 50 years. So I've got an obligation to try to help people.
Yes. Yeah. Well said. And I thought that's what was driving you was just the Good Samaritan approach right now. You're just trying to help people navigate this. And by the way, was it you flew the F4? Is that correct?
Yeah.
that's amazing. Okay. Yeah.
Now you're going to hate me for this.
What?
I joined the Marine Corps a week after I turned 18. That was a month after the Gulf of Tonkin incident, and the U.S. knew they were going to go to war in Southeast Asia. I got accepted into flight training. I got my wings when I was 20 years old. I was flying the F-4B. I was the youngest fighter pilot in the entire world, and I was getting paid to fly it.
That sounds great.
That's pretty obscene.
Yeah, no, that sounds awesome to me. I have a question for you. Did the F-4 have a cannon at all, or was it?
The answer is yes and no.
Okay.
the Air Force version had a cannon. I think it was the F-4D or the F-4E. Uh-huh. They had a six-barrel internal cannon, which made a lot of sense. We didn't realize when we went to Vietnam, we had designed the F-4 to shoot missiles.
Right.
We didn't realize we're going to have dogfights.
Yeah, that was my question. So you were dodging like ground to air, you know, SAMs basically.
Actually not.
No.
All of my missions in the F-4 were in South Vietnam. We were bomb droppers. Okay, we didn't have an air to air mission. I had one air to air mission in the F-4. Now the Navy and Marine Corps did have a Mark II 20-millimeter gun pod, but it was a gun pod as opposed to an internal cannon. But I mean, the F-4 was so cool. It was a 29,000-pound airplane that had 34,000 pounds of thrust.
And that is great.
we had a runway at Cherry Point that was an offsetting runway. There were two 10,000-foot runways. So in total, it was about 22,000 feet. And once a quarter, we would take the drop tanks off and we would put Sparrows on, which would reduce the drag. And from where you started the takeoff roll, by the time you got to 10,000 feet on the runway, you were 20,000 feet in elevation.
No. Yeah.
I mean, it's really cool.
No, that's almost completely vertical. I mean, that's crazy.
It was completely vertical. The F-4 had the time to climb record for the longest time.
Wow. And was it was a single engine?
No, it was two engines.
It was two engines.
79 engines.
Wow. And I know the, what is it? The, it had this down sweeping on the tail. What was that all about?
It was a stabilator.
Stabilator?
Yeah.
That's what they called it?
Yeah.
Huh. But I never saw that on any other military aircraft after that.
No, because if you got into a rolling pullout, you could actually pull a tail off. The Bonanza, the V-tail Bonanza, had exactly the same problem.
Huh. Okay. Wow. Well, you would know, but thanks for answering those questions. I've been curious about that for quite some time, but it's extraordinary what you've done, Bob. And I want to thank you for having the courage and the goodwill to try to help people understand and navigate all of this. And you got a couple of books are they on Amazon or Barnes and Noble? Where can people find your books?
They can find the books on Amazon. And it's interesting. My wife was from Cornwall, and I got a switch in my head that controls spelling, and I can't spell. And if I had to sit down and type a sheet of paper and spell it the way I think it should be spelled, you'd read it and think, you know, this guy is really an idiot, okay? He sounds smart, but he's not. He's really stupid. I could have been an author literally in the 1970s or the 1980s. And when Apple came out with a spell checker on the Macintosh, I thought I had died and gone to heaven. But I've written some fiction. I wrote a story about Novo Resources. I was part of that right from the very beginning to production. I wrote a story about my time in the military, and I'm absolutely, totally, categorically against war, but I am not a pacifist. I would defend the United States tomorrow.
Yes.
Against an enemy. But this idea that the Chinese are the enemy or the Russians are the enemy or Sudan or Somalia or Iran or Iraq or Afghanistan or Pakistan, if you think about it, wait a minute. There's something wrong with somebody who thinks everybody in the world is their enemy.
True.
So I, I wrote a book about war from the perspective of somebody 55 years after the fact, and how your values change and how you look at it. And for 15 years, I took small airplanes all over the world, and I wrote a book about that. And I wrote a book about investing, two different investing books, and one book called Common Sense, listing all of the problems that I see the United States has today and reasonable solutions. So it's a pretty wide spectrum, but I'm going to suggest if you go to Amazon, there would be something you would read that you would find quite interesting. And what I've tried to do with the electronic books is make them so cheap, you can buy it for 99 cents. And if you can't buy my investment books for 99 cents, if you can't afford it, you probably shouldn't be investing.
Good point. Exactly right. Well, okay, so that's it, folks. Look for Bob Moriarty on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And apparently the ebook version is 99 cents. But Bob, let me give your website one more time, 321gold.com. And I want to thank you for taking the time with us today. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. I know it's late night there in France, but I appreciate you taking the time.
It's always a pleasure. I love dealing with you. I follow you just as closely as you follow me, and I've followed you for years.
Well, that's a surprise for me to hear that, because I'm listening to you for wisdom. I'm like, I don't know anything. This guy knows what's going on. I'm going to tune into you. Look, but we do learn from each other, right? And we all have different experiences and different lessons learned, and so it makes perfect sense. But have a wonderful evening, and I look forward to joining you again. And as always, reach out to us if you have something that urgently needs to get on. We can bring you in. This is our new studio here near Austin, Texas. We can get you on here anytime.
Super deal. Well, it's a pleasure talking to you.
All right, you too, Bob. Thank you for your service, and thank you for your love for humanity. We appreciate you so much. And for all of you watching, thank you for your support and for, well, supporting not only Bob and his work, 321gold.com, but also this free speech platform, Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon, and feel free to repost this interview on other channels. Thank you for listening. God bless you all. Take care. A global reset is coming, and that's why I've recorded a new 9-hour audiobook. It's called The Global Reset Survival Guide. You can download it for free by subscribing to the naturalnews.com email newsletter, which is also free. I'll describe how the monetary system fails. I also cover emergency medicine and first aid and what to buy to help you avoid infections. So download this guide. It's free. It's my gift to you simply because I want like-minded people to survive.